Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shearer, editor of the Green Valley News, and that's Awadita Sun, along with producer Rosemary Brandt. I'm sitting in for Bill, who will be back next week. Today is Friday, August 29th, 2014, and we're headed into the long Labor Day weekend. Bill is here live weekdays from roughly noon to 1 on KVOI AM 1030 The Voice. You can find podcasts of the show at buckmastershow.com, and that's where you'll also find an archive of all the past shows so you can listen at your leisure. And don't forget Facebook. You can find Bill Buckmaster there. Just type in his name and you'll be connected. And I can see that he's been sending updates from his gorgeous vacation spot in Canada. And I hear it's getting down to like 40 degrees down there.
Thus raising the jealousy here.
Yeah, it's not good, Bill. It's not always good. Quick mention of Bill's media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, Saurita Sun, and Tucson Lifestyle, all of whom have links to the Buckmaster Show on their homepages. Our Friday focus today is on Tuesday's primary and November's general elections. We are joined on the phone from Phoenix by Jim Small, editor of Arizona Capital Times. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Great. In studio, we've got Tucson's finest and Jim Nintzel of the Tucson Weekly and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. You heard him just a minute ago. Welcome, men.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I bet. Jim, are you happy to be here?
Delighted.
Jim just slipped in at the last second, but he did make it on time.
Taking my spot as the guy who's late.
Yeah, almost late. If you'd like to join our conversation, you're welcome to call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040, 790-2040. Before we launch into this, we want to remind people that the results you've been hearing about from the primary really aren't official yet. And as of last night, there were still nearly 108,000 uncounted ballots in the state. Jim Small, are those ballots going to change anything?
There are a couple of races, actually, where they could have a tremendous impact. You know, the race for the Republican nomination in the 1st Congressional District, House Speaker Andy Tobin and rancher Gary Keeney is still very close. Tobin is holding a lead of about, I don't know, about 400 votes or so right now, 450 votes. But it's been fluctuating, and as ballots get counted, we've seen that number, you know, move. I think Tobin was up by more than 500 at one point and down by less than 300, so that one's moving. And there are three legislative races, actually, where people are separated by, you know, two of them where they're separated by less than 100 votes, and one of them where the margin's about 150 right now.
Okay, so really it's not over, and they have till when to count all of these?
Boy, I don't know if there's a hard deadline. I think realistically the bulk of the votes are in Maricopa County. They should be done, looking at the numbers they have and the pace they've been doing. I'd be surprised if come Wednesday next week after the holiday weekend if they have any votes left to count.
Yeah, they have five working days after the election to turn it in. So that would be next Wednesday. And there are ways to push that if they run into trouble. I mean, obviously you want to get the vote count right, but that's the day when they're supposed to submit, the counties are supposed to submit to the Secretary of State that their final totals.
Okay, so go ahead, Jim.
Jim, can I ask you, do we know in that Congressional District 1 race where the ballots that haven't been counted mostly are? Do you have any sense?
Yeah, it looks like most of them yesterday were in Pinal County, which is actually kind of the Republican stronghold of that district. It's a sprawling district. It's bigger than the state of Pennsylvania. It goes from the Grand Canyon in the north, the Four Corners, all the way down to it's a Saddlebrook and Oro Valley. So it covers a wide swath of the state. I think more than half were in Pinal. And there were also a fair number in Coconino, although we don't know how many of those are Republican ballots.
And as I recall, Tobin did pretty well up in Coconino, and they were kind of evenly split in Pinal?
Tobin's had a slight lead in Pinal, probably a couple hundred votes over Keeney, and Coconino is definitely Tobin country.
So it's leaning towards Tobin as these votes are counted.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, he's got the advantage right now, and I think it's tough to imagine many ways that Keeney can catch him at this point. I don't know that the math really works in his favor. I think unless there's some big pocket of votes out there, you know, people who dropped off early ballots who waited and decided that Keeney was the guy. So far, we haven't seen that trend, but it's entirely possible, you know, if there's a stash of votes out there from Navajo County or Apache County where he's got his roots, that potentially you could see some more movement in that race.
Looking at the breakdown from the Secretary of State's office of the uncounted ballots, they didn't provide a Democrat-Republican a breakout, just the number per county. But just as a seat of the pants look, it looks like as of yesterday evening, there were about 10,000 or so votes across all of those counties that weren't counted yet. And it looks like the primary sort of broke down as a 50-50 split, so there could be 5,000 votes left to count.
Okay, Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com will stay with you. Any surprises from Tuesday?
You know, I really thought that Scott Smith was going to do a little bit better in the primary. I thought that would be a tighter race. It really seems like Christine Jones did not pull as many right-wing votes away from Doug Ducey as people were thinking that she might. Although I was talking with one Republican activist on Saturday night who said that she was going to pull about 15%, and he was pretty much right on with that.
Interesting. Jim Nensel, what do you think? Any surprises?
Well, I think it's unusual to see two incumbent Republicans lose their statewide races. I don't think it's entirely surprising. They both were flawed candidates. Certainly, John Hupenthal's embrace of Common Core went against the Republican voters' general feelings about that program, and Tom Horn's many problems with various scandals certainly made him a wounded candidate going into this race. So I can't say I was surprised to see those guys lose those races, although it is unusual to see something like that happen.
There were a lot of Democrats crowing about Hupenthal, especially losing that race, and I don't know that he lost for the reasons that they think. I don't think it had anything to do with the comments he was making. It was, I think, more about the Common Core issue. It was a Republican primary with conservative Republicans voting in it, not a general election.
Right, and John Hupenthal lost to Diane Douglas, who is anti-Common Core, for sure. Jim Small, up in Phoenix, was Tom Horn doing much campaigning at all?
No, he really wasn't. I mean, he had a TV ad with Sheriff Joe Arpaio in it and seemed to kind of be clinging to that Arpaio endorsement. It was kind of the only high-profile endorsement he had, and certainly if there is anybody who can move the needle in your favor in a Republican primary, it's a guy like Arpaio. He was really kind of using him. He was trying to, I think in a lot of ways, he was kind of hoping to have a little bit of a repeat of what happened 4 years ago, where he cleaned up in Tucson, and that was what kind of put him over the edge. And the Pima County vote saved him and, you know, kind of pulled him back from the brink of defeat. Obviously, that didn't happen this time. I think clearly you can take away that Republican voters have just had enough of Tom Horn for reasons that have nothing to do with policy. And I think this is the stark difference between those two incumbents who lost. You know, it's Tom Horn, I think, was completely about the scandals and just this guy being beleaguered by things that are outside of his office. I mean, performance-wise, he's done everything plus more that he said he would do that he told Republican voters 4 years ago. He's been a conservative stalwart, and frankly has been praised by a lot of, you know, this is a guy who went from being a Democrat to a moderate Republican who is now embraced by the Tea Party. I mean, talk about a political chameleon and someone who really worked hard to win over his opponents. So I think at the end of the day, his loss clearly came down to personality and you know, kind of off the field issues, if you will, as opposed to what he actually did in office.
So now we've got Mark Brnovich, and the question for a lot of people is, who is he? Jim Nensel, do you think Mark Brnovich has a chance against Felicia Rodellini?
Absolutely, he has a chance. This is going to be a really fascinating race to watch play out. Mark Brnovich, as you said, who's Mark Brnovich? A lot of people are not aware of who Mark Brnovich is. He's a former county, state, and federal prosecutor.
Right now, he's just not Tom Horn.
Right. I think that was his biggest asset in the election, was that he was not Tom Horn, certainly. But a lot of experience in Arizona government, heading up the gaming department, also involvement with the Goldwater Institute. He's a very conservative candidate, and Felicia Rodellini certainly came very close 4 years ago against Tom Horn, has a lot of money in the bank, good statewide name ID compared to Brnovich. So I think that is probably the Democrats' best shot at winning a statewide office. Yeah,
Rodolini did not stop running after that last election. She's been working up to this for this entire term.
And she may be a good example of somebody who didn't need to have opposition in the primary to still people know who she is. But Jim Small up in Phoenix, do you think that a lot of the Democrats are going to be hurt by the fact that they did not have opposition in the primary and therefore they didn't have name recognition? I mean, you know, Fred Duvall, a lot of people are just now figuring out who the opposition to Doug Ducey is.
Yeah, and you know, realistically, given the way that the field shook out on the Republican side, I mean, the two Democrats statewide who have the most credible chance at winning are going to be Fred Duvall and Felicia Rodolini, and I think absolutely Duvall especially was hurt by that because it's such a high-profile race. Essentially, he became also mentioned in stories that were about, you know, six or seven Republican candidates. I mean, he was more or less in the same category in a lot of news stories and a lot of news reports as Frank Riggs, who was running for the Republican nomination. It's just kind of like, oh, yeah, this guy's also running. You know, and it's been, they've struggled. That campaign has struggled to try to get attention. I mean, they have, you know, basically tried to beg, borrow, and steal for media attention. And, you know, up to this point, I think the media has generally said, okay, great, call us at the end of August because exactly. We're going to cover this race that's actually exciting and fun. Where there's something at stake and not your education plan or business plan or job growth plan or whatever it might be, because we'll get to that later.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, this is a good time to take a break. We'll be right back with Jim Small, editor of the Arizona Capital Times, Jim Ninsel of the Tucson Weekly, and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Be right back.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico.
No, no, stop it!
Is your dog out of control, dragging you on walks, chewing furniture, barking, or even biting? With over 40 years' experience, Dog Masters Training can train you to provide the proper leadership your dog is waiting for. From basic obedience to walking on a lead, leash aggression to socialization, Dog Masters Training, because if you don't take control, your dog will. Visit our website, dogmasterstraining.com, or call 977-5965.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, who's on vacation. And I'm joined on the phone by Jim Small, editor of Arizona Capital Times. And in studio, we've got Jim Ninsel of Tucson Weekly and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. And Jim Small, apparently there was a story in today's Arizona Republic about Republicans who have not gotten behind Doug Ducey. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it was an interesting story. You know, basically you got the top three challengers to Ducey, Scott Smith, Christine Jones, and Ken Bennett, none of whom have formally endorsed the man who defeated them in the primary. I think emotions are running a little bit high right now. I think I would imagine that they'll probably come around and I'll endorse him. Within a short period. Although I did think that the story was notable, if only for the Christine Jones quote, where she talked about how she didn't hear Doug Ducey's victory speech, but she was pretty confident that it had a reference to ice cream in it, which is just kind of a nice little dig at Ducey, who in every speech he gives talks about ice cream and makes some kind of pun or joke about his time selling ice cream and running Cold Stone Creamery.
And he never talks about his current business. He just glosses over that.
You mean being
right. You'd have no idea that he actually still owns the company and is involved in the business world. But he does, and he is. But he certainly talks about the company that everyone knows, because they've all got a Cold Stone Creamery within a probably 10-15 minute drive of their house.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how Jones is still asking questions about his business operations. You know, not just saying, "Well, I'm going to ponder it for a couple of days," but still basically challenging him even after the election.
Yeah, she is, and the other one that was interesting too was Scott Smith. That he was essentially kind of the more moderate or centrist alternative in the primary to Ducey, and his campaign had made a big deal about how some of Ducey's policy proposals were just unworkable and would lead the state into ruin. So, he basically made a reference that he wants to see, he wants to talk with Ducey and see if he can get some good answers to some questions. And whether that happens remains to be seen. I don't know. If I'm Doug Ducey, I don't know that I care a whole heck of a lot if I get the Christine Jones and Scott Smith endorsements, because, he's got plenty of other endorsements. And unless those guys are actually going to go out and do something crazy, like spend money against him, it really doesn't matter.
No, I was at the opening of Fred Duvall's campaign headquarters down here yesterday, and he was picking up those same threads about the questions about the Kahala sale and the whole idea that he's going to question some of these policy positions that Ducey has put forth, including the idea of eliminating the state income tax. And it's interesting to see the way that Duvall is coming out the gate with an ad from Grant Woods, Republican former attorney general, really immediately going out to try to capture Republican moderates and independents in this race.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now. We've got John on the line, and you've got a question about Doug Ducey. John?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. It's the fact that Mr. Ducey formed a corporation and then purchased its own under that corporation and then failed to pay property taxes in 08 and 09. I was just wondering if that will have an impact on the general race, because it seems to me either he failed to pay his taxes and that would undermine his business acumen, or he willfully neglected to pay his taxes, which undermines his integrity and ethics and things like that. So I was just wondering if people could comment on that.
Okay, Jim Small, what do you think about that?
It may come up as an issue. You know, it came up as an issue in his run in 2010 for state treasurer. His Democratic opponent attacked him on that. I think his Republican opponents might have attacked him on it as well, actually. Didn't have a great impact then. I don't know if it will anymore. I mean, I think that, you know, it's certainly part of the argument against Doug Ducey. But I'd be surprised if it turns into any kind of central focus or something that really is a main part of the strategy for the Duval campaign.
Jim, what did you make of that public policy polling survey that came out this week? It showed both candidates at about 35%, Libertarian at Barry Hess at about 10%, which I think is probably more than he's going to get on election day.
That's generous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they had him at 12, and I think the joke that we had was in the last three elections, I don't know that Barry Hess has gotten a total of 12 points. That's probably a little too high, although I will say it's a good thing that they put him in there because so many polls tend to forget that person. And if he does, you know, if it's a close race and he does grab 3 or 4%, that really can have a difference. I think the race is probably fairly open at the moment. I think you had a lot of voters who weren't necessarily engaged because they're not primary voters. And so they're going to start to pay more attention now. Obviously, I think Ducey's got the advantage heading into it. He's got the advantage in numbers, and he's certainly got some momentum right now. And clearly, as we saw that he pumped $3.5 million of his own money into his campaign, reloading his campaign coffers may not be as difficult as many had assumed it would be for him.
Great. And if you are just joining us, this is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer sitting in for Bill. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 790-2040. We are talking about Tuesday's primary and November's general election. Let's turn our attention to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. This one's getting a little bit more attention than it normally gets. And we learned this week that Oklahoma has done away with Common Core standards, and the Republican in the race, Diane Douglas, would like to do the same here. Her opponent is David Garcia, who backs the standards. Jim Nintzel, is this all we're going to be hearing about regarding education in the next couple of months is Common Core? Because there's really a lot more to it than this.
I think Common Core will be a big issue in this campaign. I think that David Garcia's position, while he supports the standards, he has some concerns about how they are going to be implemented in the state of Arizona. So he's not a 100% booster of those standards. And I think what might be interesting to see is whether the business community turns to supporting David Garcia because they are concerned about Diane Douglas and how she might run that office. Given her kind of single issue strategy here in the primary.
Yeah, and I spoke to her recently, and she would insist that Common Core, while it is a single issue, actually touches lots of different parts of the job. And so it would be very interesting to see what happens in this. And again, she came up through the ranks as a concerned mom, and then she served on the Peoria School Board. David Garcia has a doctorate from the University of Chicago. They kind of come at this from different ways. Again, one of those races that normally doesn't get much attention, but this time it certainly is going to.
I haven't heard anybody articulate a solid reason to oppose Common Core other than just tying it to the Obama administration and we don't want them telling us what to do. And that's not where the idea came from. It came from the Republican Governors Association and a widespread group of education experts who developed it outside of government. Well, but Jim, it seems to just be something to rail against.
Well, Jim Small, do you think that some candidates sort of attached this race to the anti-Obama sentiment at the time, and anti-Common Core is anti-Obama, and they thought they'd get votes from that?
I think every race has been attached to the anti-Obama sentiment. I mean, how many Republicans just got tied to were called puppets of Obama in this past primary?
Right.
It was absurd. it's definitely part of it. I mean, and that's, but the interesting thing, though, is if you look at some of the polling on it, I mean, we haven't seen any in Arizona, but nationally the polling shows that, I mean, this is not just a Republican issue. I mean, Democrats are increasingly becoming dissatisfied with Common Core, with the idea, the perception that it's not working or that it's some kind of takeover from local control. Independents are very strongly against Common Core. I mean, they break on it, opposed to it just about as much as Republicans do in some of this polling. And so I think it really is kind of, it's an issue that started off maybe as a Tea Party, vocal Tea Party people complaining about it, but it's really taken on a different life since that point.
Very good.
And I think there's a balance that people are trying to strike between creating these state or national standards to make sure that kids are learning what they need to learn to succeed in the 21st century and avoiding having a situation where everything's decided by tests. And there is definitely concern on the left about the idea of just putting teachers in a position where they need to teach to a test, teach to a test, teach to a test, and this sort of narrow approach to things. So I think that's something that with Common Core, if it does go forward, needs to be sorted out.
Well, I think Diane Douglas also attached the cost of Common Core to this, and she says that Arizona funds education at a reasonable level, but that with these now federal burdens on us, this is what's making it untenable, and that if we didn't have those on us, we're just fine, because she feels an obligation to the taxpayer and to the children we're educating. So it's a very, very interesting argument. Not sure I agree with her that we're giving enough to education, but it certainly is. She certainly has an argument.
The courts don't seem to agree with her either.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with you. Let me make a statement here, and any of you jump in, and then the TV ads and the flyers, you know, I get in the mail. I know there's a very high likelihood that they're full of lies. Has the average voter caught on to this yet? Jim Small.
Ah, wow. No, probably not. I think the average voter, average voter in what sense? I mean, in the primary or in the general? Because
yeah.
Those are two different categories of voter.
You mean we're going to get different lies for the general? Is that what you're saying? I mean,
I think the people who vote in a primary tend to be more politically engaged, frankly, and they tend to actually, if they're going to go to the effort of voting in the heat of summer at a time when most people aren't paying attention to elections, I think that they're more engaged, and they probably are maybe, you know, a little bit more, pay more attention to that kind of stuff, and already in a lot of cases I think know who they want to vote for and who they believe with, because they have strong political feelings. In November, I think everyone, most voters who show up, I think really just hate the election time because their mailboxes get full, their recycle bins end up getting full, their answering machines get filled up with messages from computers, and they turn on the TV and all they see is each side calling the other side basically, you know, evil. And what are your options at that point? I mean, that's why you see races where the third party candidate ends up with, you know, 10% of the vote, because people are just sick of, they don't want to vote for either person, either of the main party people, because they've been tarred and feathered.
Aren't primary voters the most partisan of voters, people who already have made up their mind and aren't going to really pay attention to the ads and the flyers, or, you know, they already know the person they want to vote for and the policies they want to back?
I think in a lot of cases, but you know, certainly you're always going to have some undecided voters. You know, people who just don't know. I mean, I take my in-laws, for instance. You know, I mean, or even my parents. I mean, when I talk to them, it's hey, what can you tell me about this person? But it's, again, it's because they're engaged and they actually want to find out information, and they'll go seek it out, as opposed to being passively involved and letting all that information come to them and have to make up their minds that way.
But they also know that you're going to be an objective source, and this stuff that comes in the mail, which in my house doesn't even make it into the house, is completely
Does anybody
skewed.
Take that stuff into their house? I mean, it's our job to read it, and we still all toss it into the recycling bin on the way back inside,
well,
right?
Yeah, but I do read it, but I do not watch the TV ads. I got to say that.
I'm decorating my child's nursery with campaign flyers.
Okay, that is just cruel and unusual.
Yeah,
I'm calling CPS.
CPS,
man.
They're coming after me in no time at all. Jim, what about, you know, there was all this talk ahead of the election about the impact of independents on this race. They were going to turn out in larger numbers, but at the end of the day, it seems as though the conservative candidates, in most cases, carried the day.
The conservative candidates did, and we haven't yet seen the final breakdown on turnout figures yet. We should be getting that hopefully next week. What we do know is that independents certainly voted early at a much higher rate than they had in the past. And so there's one of two things that means. It either means that independents in general were going to vote more, and they were going to, if they turned out at the polls at the normal clip, then we were going to see a surge in independent voting. Or it means that independents who were already engaged and who already were planning, would have voted at the polls on Election Day, instead cast an early ballot. And so I don't think because we haven't seen the final turnout figures yet, I think it's too early to say what kind of an impact they had. But even if they have more of an impact than normal, I mean, we're still talking about a really small, like turnout will probably be somewhere in the 25% range overall. Independent turnout will still be in like the 6 to 7% range, which is extremely tiny.
Yeah, interesting. We're going to head back to the phone, and we've got yet another Jim on the line. Jim, you got a Common Core question.
Yeah, I had more comments than questions.
Okay.
Even within the Republican Party, there is a split on supporting Common Core and not supporting Common Core. The problem is that it was a really great idea to have common standards across the states because of our very mobile society. And if we didn't want children punished that were moving from one district to another in this, these huge disparities in achievement and the requirement of knowledge base. So that was the whole point of Common Core. Here's the problem. It got hijacked by the corporatists on one side, and it got hijacked by the very far left on the other. The far left hijacked the corporatism, and the corporatism hijacked the manner in which it will be implemented with regards to textbooks and things like that, and testing.
Okay.
So there's the big problem right there. And even the Republicans are confused about what to support and what not to support.
Okay, Jim. Jim, thanks.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, we're going to. Okay, thank you. Common Core, yet another good idea gone bad, is basically what you were saying. We're going to wind up this segment. I want to thank Jim Small, editor of Arizona Capital Times, joining us by phone from Phoenix. Thank you, Jim.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, you can read more about them at azcapitaltimes, that's with an O.com. And hanging on after the break for our Friday roundtable will be Jim Nintzel and Dylan Smith. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ken Flower of the number one party rental company in Southern Arizona. Say hello to some of our satisfied customers, who to us are also number one.
Bob Schaff with Customers for Life Consulting.
Bill Hussey with Clear Channel Outdoor and the Centurions.
Joseph Blair, community leader and founder of Blair Trader Group.
Red Cross Director Richard White.
Bert Williams with Williams & Associates.
Bill Harlow of Harlow Gardens.
Wow, what a lineup. You can join the party too. Arizona Party Rental on Speedway or online at arizonapartyrental.net.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Want the best care for your companion animal?
then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's V-S-C-O-T.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun. It's time for our Friday roundtable where we kick around some news of the week. Staying over from our last half hour are Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com and Jim Ninsel, reporter for Tucson Weekly. Guys, we have beat to death the elections, but anything else to add before we really focus on November? Anything else from the primary that was a surprise or anything?
You know, there weren't all that many surprises, although actually seeing Chuck Wooten come out, you know, with a decent showing in that primary was, I didn't think he was going to go quite that high.
Yeah, CD2, and he was up against Martha McSally and then Shelley Kice. And yes, he did do actually fairly well, given the fact that a year ago nobody knew who he was.
Got over 20% of the vote.
I'm not sure people even still know who he is. I think that whole vote may be a sign that there are some conservatives within the Republican primary electorate who are suspicious of Martha McSally.
Yeah.
And just don't
think that
she's
was a not Martha vote rather than
was,
a yes, yay Chuck vote.
Well, I don't know how many times
not rooting for Wooten.
I don't know how many times you heard from Chuck Wooten over the course of the campaign.
Never.
Reached out a number of times to the Wooten campaign and finally got a call on a Saturday
was
afternoon.
Was there a Wooten campaign?
There was. There was.
Sort of was. I got a call on a Saturday afternoon from Chuck Wooten, and I thought, oh, he's finally calling me back, but it was a robocall asking for my vote. So,
you know, maybe guys, just comes down to who you trust, because, hey, I heard from him, you know, I heard from him a couple times. And he did do that forum for us down there in Green Valley, Sahuarita, where he and McSally and Kice were there, and I appreciated that. I think it's their duty to put themselves up on stage before people, but they did get out there, but there definitely was a sense that people, that he didn't trust certain segments of the media. There's no doubt about it.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, and that's probably a gross understatement. Dylan, you had the Cochise County vote up on your website, a story about that. What is going on over there, and are we getting toward normalcy?
We don't know. They don't know. I've been asking questions for the last few days about exactly what went wrong when they turned in their totals Tuesday night and were updating them. They were completely off and showing that they had a voter turnout of 60%, which is unlikely in a general election, much less in a, you know, mid-August primary. Yeah. So they noticed that and they started looking at it and realized that their totals were, you know, just not correct. So they were pulled down and removed from the Secretary of State's website, and they took their not their individual ballots, but their data and took it to another county to be recounted so they could try and, you know, come up with an accurate vote. So I've been pressing them on trying to explain exactly where the error was, and right now they don't really know.
So we don't. I bet it's the Y2K bug.
Well, they had tested their system, you know, and everything was kosher and as it was supposed to be, and you know, the counts came out with what they fed in when they did the tests. So, you know, you can't.
Scary.
There was some sort of programming error that didn't quite work, or there was human error in putting the data in.
Right.
And they put a couple in too many times, or, you know, at this point we don't know, but we are assured that the results that they're reporting now are accurate and up to date.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear somebody suggest Chuck Huckleberry was trying to rig it
in another county.
In Cochise
County.
He's
that powerful.
To take the attention off of
us. He's been thwarted here, and now he's moving down south.
Well, and Cochise County.
I haven't gotten
County
that email
yet.
From Bill Beard yet, but I'm sure it's coming.
Cochise County is key. Sierra Vista's down there. And so, yeah, something to watch. It certainly raised a couple of eyebrows, to say the least. If you want to join our conversation here on the Buckmaster Show live line, it is 790-2040. We're talking about just the news of the week with Jim Ninsel and Dylan Smith. Jim, you guys had in the Tucson Weekly an interesting story titled "Who Wants to Be a Teacher?" So what's the answer to the question?
Well, Tom Danahy spoke with some teachers about the frustrations that they're having these days in the schools, and I think also examined how the cuts to the education system in the state have impacted morale in the classroom, and an interesting look at that, and he touched on the whole issue regarding this Supreme Court decision that the state has underfunded education, and you know, that's going to be a really interesting issue moving forward into the general campaign. Court ruling that the legislature needs to come up with another $300 million plus to fund the schools. I imagine you'll see a difference between Doug Ducey. I think we've already seen a difference. Doug Ducey wants to continue to appeal this ruling, which is interesting because it's already gone all the way to the Supreme Court and then got kicked back down to the lower court. So I don't know where you're thinking you're going to get a reversal of that ruling. Meanwhile, Fred Duvall is saying, you know, we need to come up with this money. We need to pay this money, and we need to fund our schools. So you're going to have a very interesting debate over that, I think, moving forward into the general election.
My wife taught for years in TUSD, and she resigned, not even so much because of the money, although she didn't get a raise and was actually making less money after a 5-year stretch than at the start of it, but certainly not working with the kids, but just the environment, the administration and the other teachers, and just dealing with the district was too much. It's not a good culture for people to work in these days. It's terrible.
It's overwhelming.
It's a
not
very,
worth it.
Very difficult job, and I sure. certainly respect the folks who are sticking it out to try to make sure kids do get an education.
And I've said this on the program before. My daughter is a second-year teacher. She teaches first grade down in the Sowetita Unified School District, and it's very excited about it. And I tell you what, for her, it comes down to support, and they have very strong support on the very local level in the school and everything, and so that's a big deal. But still, we have a lot of teachers bumping out after 5 years. It's barely the amount of time they spent in college, and they want out either for money, or they're disillusioned, or they feel like they can reach the goal a different way. But that's 5 years is not a very long time.
No, and completely understandable.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. We're going to head to the phone now. We've got Chuck, and he wants to head back to the election. Chuck, you had a question about early balloting.
Yes, I would just like to know from your reporters what they feel about early elections and what the impact has been on not only this election but past elections, insofar as delaying all the final reporting and all that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Dylan, what do you think?
For the most part, it doesn't delay knowing who is coming out on top. Generally, the results you get early on pretty much hold up. If it's going to be a very, very close race, then counting every last ballot is sometimes necessary. As we've seen, in the past couple of, CD8, CD2 elections, where it comes down to the wire. But it does seem to help turn out a little bit, and perhaps it helps people make a more considered decision. If you go into the polls and you're looking at a ballot with 67 different candidates and a bunch of propositions and initiatives and everything else, and trying to remember which one was which and what your vote was, it's a whole lot easier to do that at your kitchen table. Speaking for myself, I still like the civic exercise of going to the polls on election day. I'm kind of old school in that respect. But
you're also a high information voter.
You know
who you're voting for when you go in there. I think of a lot of seniors out there who are my mom going into the polling place and looking over this extraordinarily long ballot and trying to sort it out. I look at other states where people are standing in line for hours in order to cast a vote, and I completely respect people who will stand in line for a few hours, but it's very clear that in Arizona, voters like the idea of voting early. I mean, we've got it's been growing every year. I think we've got about 7 out of 10 voters now requesting those early ballots. It does lead to a logjam. In some ways, it spoils some of our fun as reporters on election night because those results come out at 8 o'clock and we may not have much else to do.
And we're done.
And it used to be we'd watch,
Well, it's hard to go find voters to talk to. You can't go down the line of 100 people standing in line to vote because there are only a handful of people actually going to the polls and things like that. But, I think in the states, if you look at those states where people are standing in line for, hours and hours and hours, that cannot be good for democracy, that they have to do that. It's wonderful that someone is willing to do that, to have their say in how our country is run. But shouldn't we try and have more people participating in that? The more people who participate, the more they will continue to be involved.
And I can only imagine that when some people look at those lines, it discourages them from even bothering to vote.
So. People do raise the issue that somehow mail-in ballots or early voting are, make things more susceptible to voter fraud. But we really haven't seen any widespread examples of anything. There are a couple of voter fraud cases every year, and that's it. You can count them on your fingers.
And they're not making the difference in any of these races, I don't think.
No, but if I vote early and I decide to change and I change my mind, can I vote again?
No. I think once you've cast your ballot, you've cast your ballot, and if you show up on election day, they're going to say you can cast a provisional ballot,
right.
And then they're going to look and see you already voted, and they're going to discard your new vote.
Couldn't you just lie and say the provisional one was a fake one, and you need to count this one?
You know what? You can get your attorneys looking into exactly
what's,
how that.
What's wrong with a little perjury?
Yeah, I would just.
I think you got a voter fraud case.
You know what? You could change your mind after election day. Okay. That's
there you go.
You know what? I want to take that back.
And for the most part, you got another shot here come November. Okay, I want to thank Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, Jim Nintzel of the Tucson Weekly for being our guests on the Friday Roundtable. Hope you both have a great long weekend. Coming up, we have Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. We will be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Jerry!
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 8/31/14. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Tucson Desert Art Museum.
Tucson's newest art museum is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerville Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. For more on the great places to stay and things to do, log on to southwestnewmexico.org. Now here is Matt Russell, food and beverage columnist for Inside Tucson Business and, of course, award-winning publicist. How you doing, Matt?
Dan, I am doing great. I'm rolling up my sleeves, getting ready to dive into a delicious Labor Day weekend. How about you?
Oh, same thing. And hey, I think I said this to you about a year ago. Tomorrow I'm the birthday boy. I want a birthday place to go to.
Oh, okay. Well, is your wife going to be taking you to birthday dinner?
She is.
Okay, good. Well, then she needs to take you to one of my favorite places in town, Wildflower, over on Ina and Oracle.
Oh, yeah.
Great place. Not just for the special occasion. I mean, we love it all year round. But I think a spectacular backdrop for a birthday celebration. You can't go wrong, man.
It's a great place. I've been there. So, okay, what do we got going on this weekend?
Well, you know, here we are again at the start of another exciting season for U of A football. And with a 7:30 kickoff tonight, there's plenty of time to grab a bite and a beverage pregame at one of these great eateries around campus. But our pick today, Dan, is Gentle Bend's on University just west of Park. Now, these guys just finished a major remodel of their patio. They got some huge TV screens and a state-of-the-art misting system. But, of course, beer is king at this local brew house, so you'll want to be sure to try some of their spectacular suds while you wash down some great food. Wear your red and bear down tonight at Gentle Bend, Dan.
Great. Love it. Okay, how about an award-winning breakfast here we got at a little bit of a surprising place?
Yeah, you know, as you know, we're always in search of a great breakfast here on the Weekend Watch. And I say this is the perfect weekend to check out the place that just took the top honors for best breakfast in Tucson. It's called Omar's Highway Chef at the Triple T Truck Stop, 5451 East Benson Highway. Now, these guys have been around for decades, Dan, and are probably best known for their apple pie, but there's something about their breakfast that has this town all abuzz. So why not consider breakfast this weekend at the Triple T?
The Triple T. And, you know, truck stops have actually gotten much more healthy over the last decade or so. I mean, you know.
Say it ain't so, dear.
They're not greasy spoons anymore, man. They actually mean something. Okay.
Indeed.
Okay. And now my absolute favorite food. Go on to your next one there. Gourmet burgers.
Yeah, seriously, what would Labor Day weekend be without a juicy burger? And our friends over at Five Palms Steak and Seafood have you covered, some might say literally. Now, they just launched a gourmet burger bar featuring 10 distinct and delicious burgers ranging from a truffle butter burger with white cheddar to a crab and lobster burger with a sriracha remoulade. Now, fries and extra napkins come with these beauties. So get your burger on this weekend at Five Palms on Sunrise Drive, just east of Campbell. Now, Dan, when was the last time you had a sriracha remoulade?
I've never had one. Never had one.
You are in for a treat, my friend.
Unbelievable. That might be our pick for the birthday meal. But, hey, what's the difference between a gourmet burger and the number two at Burger King? Besides about not 10 much. Bucks.
Exactly.
Oh, brother. I'm sure it is great. Hey, tell us about the column. What are we going to be reading about this week?
Yeah, Dan, you know, Tucson has a new Iron Chef in town. He's John Hone of Bob's Steak and Chop House, of course, up at the Omni Tucson National Resort. Now, he's going to be recreating the very menu that won the judges' hearts at a special dinner up at Bob's on September the 8th. And I take a look at each and every delicious course in the current edition of Inside Tucson Business. This is royalty at its finest, and what a treat our listeners are in for.
Okay, now you're in for a treat, because we actually got a caller about you here, and the person wants to know, where in town is the best chicken fried steak?
Oh, my goodness.
Putting you on the spot.
Okay, chicken fried steak. Last time I had it, which was, I can't even tell you how long it's been since, you know, I try to watch my girlish figure. But the chicken fried steak, I think, over at the Lodge, Sasquatch Kitchen over by the Tucson Mall.
Okay.
The thing literally hangs across the edges of the plate, and I think it's spectacular.
Very good. Matt Russell, food and beverage columnist for Inside Tucson Business. Thank you, and have a great weekend. You deserve it.
Happy birthday, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you. Water on the Bill Buckmaster Show is provided by Culligan, Better Water, Pure and Simple. Bill has turned over the chair this week to a couple of us, and we really appreciate that, but we will appreciate probably as much as you do, Bill getting back next week. So for Rosemary Brandt, our producer, and for all of my colleagues at the Green Valley News, Sawadita Sun, thank you for letting me come up here and do this for Bill. We appreciate it, and we will see you next time.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.